Welcome to KG News Morning Magazine. It's Friday, July 22nd of 2022. I'm your host, Alexis Kenyon. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, we get an update from last night's City Council meeting. Shay Castle provides us with all the highlights. After that, Boulder has declared July 23rd Clela Rorick's Day. Then it's Sports Talk with KGNU's Jimmy Searfoss. And finally, our weekly segment on localnonprofits.org. At 8:30, Connections comes your way. And at 9:30, the Morning Sound Alternative will bring you 2.5 hours of eclectic music until noon. That's all still ahead, but first, these local and regional headlines with KGNU's Stacey Johnson.
Boulder County District Court Judge Ingrid Bakke ordered Thursday that the man charged with killing 10 people at the Boulder, Table, Mesa, King Soopers remains mentally incompetent to stand trial. The ruling stems from recent findings by experts at the State Mental Health Hospital in Pueblo. Court proceedings against 23-year-old Ahmad Al-Awi Alyssa have been on hold since December when Judge Bakke ruled he was not competent to stand trial and sent him to the state mental hospital for treatment. Hospital officials last reported in April that Alyssa still was mentally incompetent, however said there was substantial probability Alyssa's mental competency could be restored and remain competent by taking medication. The court scheduled the next meeting to assess Alyssa's mental health status for October 21st. Representatives from Boulder County, Broomfield, Longmont, and Erie challenged the Air Quality Control Commission to take action at its monthly meeting Thursday. The Boulder area governments presented their own independent air quality reports and studies and pleaded with the state commission to look at the numbers. According to the Daily Camera, Boulder County officials pointed to the county's persistent ground-level methane recordings and increases in ozone. Broomfield researchers said their data shows individuals living less than 1 mile from multi-well horizontal oil and gas sources report upper respiratory and acute health symptoms more often than residents living at a greater distance. Boulder County documented reoccurring oil and gas leaks at nearly 65% of oil and gas facilities over multi-calendar years. Over 100 people attended Thursday's virtual meeting, with many urging commission members to do more to lower emissions across the state. The Denver metro area has seen a 13% increase in its unhoused population over the past 2 years. The Colorado Sun reports that the preliminary data from the Metro Denver Homeless Initiative point-in-time survey said that regionally, 784 more people lost their homes during the pandemic. At the beginning of this year, they counted just under 7,000 people without homes across the Denver metro areas. The team estimated that the amount of unhoused people was close to almost 31,000 people throughout the course of the year. The Fruta Police Department has sought a second arrest warrant Thursday afternoon for Tina Peters, the embattled Mesa County clerk who is facing charges stemming from a security breach of her county's election system done last year. KGNU's Luis Lacon reports.
In March, a grand jury indicted Peters with 10 counts of felony and misdemeanor charges, including attempting to influence a public servant, criminal impersonation, identity theft, and first-degree official misconduct. The arrest warrant alleges Peters violated the terms of her bond and protective order by emailing the Mesa County Collections Director, Brandy Bantz, at 2:44 a.m. on July 20th. In the email sent to Bantz and 61 county clerks, Peters said that she would seek a hand count vote of the June 28th Republican primary results for the Colorado Secretary of State, a race she ran for and lost. The Colorado Secretary of State's office says that the candidates seeking recounts among races without close margins must pay $250,000 up front, which Peters did not do. Matt Crane, executive director of the Colorado County Clerks Association, said in a written statement that Peters' request was improper and again shows her complete lack of knowledge about the rules and laws that underpin Colorado's elections. Peters faced an arrest warrant last week by failing to receive court permission to travel out of the state. Mesa County Court Judge Matthew Barrett dismissed the warrant based on an admission by Peters' attorney that he failed to advise his client on the terms of her bond. For KGNU, I am Luis Licon.
Colorado voters will get to decide in November if the state should decriminalize the use and possession of magic mushrooms. The Colorado Secretary of State's office said on Thursday the agency received enough signatures for the initiative to qualify for the upcoming statewide ballot. The November ballot question will also ask voters if the state should allow healing centers where individuals can purchase and consume magic mushrooms, which contain the psychoactive compound psilocybin. The initiative, if passed, will allow individuals to cultivate magic mushrooms for their own personal use and would be legal for people 21 and over at the state level. Psilocybin will remain illegal at the federal level. Colorado would be the second state behind Oregon to legalize magic mushrooms if the initiative passes. Today's weather for Boulder and Fort Collins includes a 10 to 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms after 11 a.m. Denver's forecast includes a 10% chance of showers and thunderstorms after 2 p.m. Today's high is expected to be near 99, and because of the expected high temps, the National Weather Service for Boulder and Denver has issued a heat advisory for the metro area and the northeast plains of Colorado. Tonight, skies will be partly cloudy for Boulder and Fort Collins and mostly clear for Denver. Tonight's lows will be in the low to mid 60s. The current temperature in Boulder is 70 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacey Johnson.
You're listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm Alexis Kenyon. Boulder City Council had what seemed like a pretty long agenda last night. This is the second week of having meetings on Thursdays rather than the previous time on Tuesdays. For an update on how things went, we have Shay Castle with us of Boulder Beats. Shay, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thanks for having me.
So to start, what were some of the highlights from last night's meeting?
Well, last night was a pretty transportation-heavy meeting. We got an update from RTD's Lynn Geisinger. We got an update from Boulder County on their transportation tax that they're going to put on the ballot. There was a little bit about the downtown bus station and Boulder's new focus on the core arterial network. I feel like I'm missing even one. There was just so much transportation stuff last night. It was almost the entire meeting.
What can you explain to us, what is the core arterial network and what was this focus on it?
Thank you. Yes, this was a shift really in where Boulder puts its energy. So arterial roads are the biggest and the busiest streets. They primarily their primary purpose is to get people through the area. So think about like the Broadway corridor and, you know, 30th Street, the big streets like that. And so earlier this year, council decided we're really going to focus on these streets because that's where the majority of our serious accidents occur. And, you know, most of them with pedestrians and cyclists. So a lot of the improvements are around bus infrastructure, pedestrian infrastructure, and bike infrastructure as the city looks to of completely eliminating serious injuries and deaths from car crashes. So that is really a shift toward putting our resources there. And last night, council got a more in-depth look at how exactly the city intends to do that, what projects and where's the funding coming from and such.
So what is the plan there?
Well, actually, because these are Boulder's busiest streets, several of the projects are already ongoing. You know, for many years, there's been a plan to realign the 30th Street corridor. There's been a pedestrian and bike underpass going in at 30th and Colorado near the university. So lots of existing work already, and those things just kind of fit in really nicely to the core arterial network kind of plan for transportation. But, you know, other things that are upcoming is, you know, Baseline Road is one of the corridors, and it's like, okay, how do we protect bike lanes in the short term? And then as we repave that road, what small improvements can we make? And then further down the road, how do we do, you know, protected bus stops, protected bike lanes, some better signal crossings, things like that.
Was there any conversation about extending the Lime scooter program or, you know, creating more infrastructure for micro vehicles?
You know, we haven't had an update on that in quite some time. That's a good reminder to maybe look into that. You're right. Our pilot project should be just about up and we should be getting an update on that. I haven't heard too much hand-wringing or concern over that. It seems to have been quite popular, but of course, you never know. So,
yeah. Yeah, I think it started last September, so it's been about a year. So I wanted to ask you before we move forward about the bus lines, because I know that they decided to discontinue some of them that they had dropped when COVID, you know, began, and now they're making these permanent decisions.
Mm-hmm. Yes, RTD is doing what's called a service optimization plan that actually is going to be voted on Tuesday by the board. So that's really shifting their services to where ridership is highest, which tends to be in urban cores. There's more people that need the bus versus office workers in the suburbs. Like Boulder doesn't necessarily think of itself as a suburb, but compared to Denver, and we look at density and need, it kind of is. So system-wide, RTD is about 70% of its pre-pandemic service. The goal with a system optimization plan over 5 years is to get to 85% of service. Boulder's service will be at 84%. So slightly less than the system as a whole, because we are less dense and more suburban, but significantly higher than they were initially proposing for us. And we are going to get a couple lines back at Boulder Junction, which was a big deal, you know, including a Flatiron Flyer to Union Station and a bus to the airport. Several more of our Flatiron Flyer lines are being restored. So we're getting a lot more service than we were, still not 100% of where we were in 2019.
So you mentioned to me earlier that the city is doing an update on the Hill too. Could tell me what is this update?
Right. Next week is a study session, and there is an update on, they initially were calling it the Hill Nuisance Ordinance. It's renamed to Hill Revitalization. So for several years, there's been a focus to try to get more business up there, get more people up there. And part of that has been, well, it's such a college heavy area. Obviously, that's where the university is, that was there before anyone else and anything else. But there's been a lot of issues with noise, partying, trash, and, you know, listeners will certainly remember the riot of last year, which kind of put things over the top. So I don't know exactly what we're going to be looking at, because they didn't include notes to council, but they are, as Boulder Reporting Lab reported, looking to overhaul their nuisance ordinances so that, you know, officers have more discretion to ticket for things like noise and partying. They'll ticket during the day for noise ordinances, not just at night. And they're removing some plea deals for students on some of those charges. The update might focus just on the nuisance work. It might be broader to talk about, you know, what are we doing for businesses? The hotel project is going in up there. The CU Conference Center are expected to revitalize the area. So we might get an update on both of those projects.
Before I let you go, I just wanted you to, real quick, I know we're going to be talking, the council session is meeting this week to talk about police reform. What should we be looking out for in this council session?
Again, just the first look at the new police reform plan, reimagining policing. I would encourage your listeners to go online and read that draft plan. Lots of big new stuff in there.
Well, Shay Castle, thank you so much for talking with me. I really appreciate it.
Again, thanks for having me.
Shay is the founder and a reporter, the sole reporter at Boulder Beats. You're listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. On Saturday, Boulder will celebrate its first Clela Rorix Day. Rorix, who passed away earlier this summer, was known as a gay rights pioneer. In 1975, when she was serving as a newly elected Boulder County clerk, she became the first clerk in the nation to knowingly certify a marriage between a same-sex couple. Before being pushed out of office, Rorix issued a total of 6 marriage licenses to gay couples in Boulder County. I spoke with Marty Moore, one of Rorix's close friends, and the executive director of Out Boulder County, who says Rorix fought for equal rights until the day she died. Marty, thanks so much for talking with me.
I'm happy to be here this morning. Thank you.
So to start, can you just tell me about Clela Rorix? How did you meet Clela? And, you know, what was she like as a friend and as a leader?
Yeah, so I had the pleasure of meeting Clela shortly before the one-year anniversary of civil unions in the state of Colorado. And through that, I found a really kind person. I found a person who tells really good stories. Like you, I could ask anything. One of the fun stories, in the last month or so of her life, we were visiting and I had walked outside of the office and I said, Clela, did you ever smoke? She's like, I smoked twice. And she said she had just gotten elected as county clerk. And as Clela tells it, you know, people weren't that excited about this young 30-year-old feminist who is now county clerk. You know, it was a men's club and she had this big budget. And so she went in to meet with the county commissioners, sat down, and she said, I took a pack of cigarettes in with me and I was making my points to the county commissioners about why I needed this budget. And she took one out. She put it up to her lips and lit it, and she lit the wrong end. And she was like, so my smoking career was very short, Marty. And she had a good chuckle in remembering that one. But Clela was an independent woman who tells really good stories. And I made a friend that many people already had.
So there's a quote from Clela that she gave in an interview with WNYC where she explains why she issued a marriage license to a same-sex couple. She says that as a woman who was fighting for her own equality, she couldn't imagine denying that equality to someone else. I mean, as a feminist, where do you think that Clela fit into the gay rights movement?
Yeah. In thinking about Clela as related to like where I am in the movement and thinking about like her leading the way, one of the stories that Clela hates, absolutely hates, is any time anybody brings up the horse, where the guy walked into the courthouse with his horse and he's like, I want to marry my horse, because he was discounting like LGBT people as humans.
So I'm going to jump in here just for listeners. After Clela, newly elected county clerk, decided to issue a marriage license to a same-sex couple, she faced a ton of backlash. She got hate mail, and one guy decided to ride his horse to the court office and demand that Clela marry him and his horse. So this horse story ended up getting a ton of attention and really launching Clela into the national spotlight, because Johnny Carson brought it up and was joking about it on his Tonight Show monologue.
You know, this could be the first time that a husband will ride his wife to the wedding reception.
Yeah, so I was reading about it in Ms. Magazine, you know, being a 10-year-old. You know, in 75, Clela was doing it. She wasn't just burning her bra. Like, she was running for office. And we talk about, you know, I'm old enough to remember the year of the woman. Like, give me a break. Just go down the list of what these amazing women who, against all odds, ran for office and did those things. And Clela was one of those. She didn't know any gay people when she issued that first marriage license. But she didn't think that it was held out for only straight people. And so Clela's feminism was always intact. Clela's inclusion of trans people in the LGBT community was never questioned. You know, and Clela wasn't perfect. None of us are perfect. But like a good ally, she was always wanting to learn and correct mistakes and move forward. It's a tremendous loss for me personally. And it's a tremendous loss for our community. She's kind of a rock star. She's somebody who's going to be missed in our community. She had a pretty dry yet wicked sense of humor, and was a proponent of women in politics and of moving the ball forward with special attention to the LGBT community.
Marty Moore is the executive director of Out Boulder County and a longtime friend of Clela Rorick's. Marty, thanks so much for talking with me.
It's been my pleasure. Alexis, thanks for having me.
In honor of Clela Rorick's Day, Out Boulder County is asking people to hang their rainbow flags on Saturday. You're listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Alexis Kenyon. Time now for Sports Talk with Jimmy Searfoss.
Did you know KGNU talks about sports now? Yeah, right. Who do they got to talk about that? Hello and welcome back to the best sports show on KGNU, Sports Talk with Jimmy. I am your host, Jimmy Searfoss, coming at you with the best news and stories from the Front Range. On this Friday morning, I wanted to show some love to a team that got a bit overlooked because while the Colorado Avalanche were winning their Stanley Cup, the Colorado Mammoths were winning a championship of their own. The Mammoths are the professional indoor lacrosse team that calls Denver home. Now, you see, Ball Arena gets a lot of looks. When the Avalanche are in town, it's iced over. When the Nuggets come home, the wooden court lines the ground. And when the Mammoths stomp back into Denver, turf replaces the bottom of the arena. They play in the Western Conference of the National Lacrosse League, a 14-team league that was established way back in 1986. The Mammoths have been donning the burgundy and black in Denver since 2003, and they are your NLL champions for the first time since they won it back in 2006. On July 18th, the Mammoths defeated the Buffalo Bandits in a best-of-three-game series in the third game. It is the second time that they had ever won the finals, and also the second time they've had a finals victory against the Bandits. In the championship-clinching game, goaltender Dylan Ward was named the most valuable player of the series and also made 55 saves. Forward Zed Williams also scored the most goals of that game with 4. Entering the finals, the Mammoths were the 3 seed after finishing the season with 10 wins and 8 losses. By the end, they were hoisting the National Lacrosse League trophy. And boy, did they celebrate. The Mammoths participated in the championship parade that was attended by 500,000 people. They sat with their championship trophy atop a fire truck that rolled right along the same route as the Stanley Cup. And much like the Stanley Cup, the National Lacrosse League Championship Trophy also gets to spend a day with each individual player on the team. So, while the players get to enjoy their championship honeymoon, the fans wait patiently until December, when the Mammoths will take the turf again to begin their quest for back-to-back championships in the 2023 season. I know I'll be there. And that is all the time we have for you this Friday morning. This has been Jimmy with KGNU. For more, be sure to tune in next week on the next episode of Sports Talk.
You're listening to KGNU. Up next, it's .org, our weekly segment on local nonprofits.
Hi, this is Chris Schultz from KGNews.org, and I'm here with Mira Mintzer from Growing Up Boulder. Mira, you want to tell us a little bit about Growing Up Boulder and what you guys do?
Yes, Growing Up Boulder is Boulder's child and youth-friendly city initiative, and our mission is to offer young people opportunities to participate, deliberate, and influence local issues that affect their lives. The UNCRC, as it's called, has 41 articles, and one of them is the right of a young person to have a voice. And so that's really been the right that we've most focused on here in Boulder. To give you a very concrete example, if you go to Boulder Public Library, you'll see there's a beautiful playground next to the creek with lots of nature play and restored habitat. There's also easier entry into the water. All of those ideas came from young people. On a more somber note, we've been working with children and youth to heal from the King Soopers tragedy that happened in March 2021 here. And so we've been working to hear both how young people want to heal and how they want to support their peers. So a lot of our work has been around urban planning or environmental design with young people. We've had kids as young as 3 give input to the city's transportation master plan. We have had 8-year-olds give input on what does affordable, sustainable housing look like. One of the things we're doing is we're really building upon one of Growing Up Boulder's founders' research. So Professor Louise Chawla wrote a paper about how important it is to create nature connection with young people, then have them take action and collective action in order to increase their hope and their ability to deal with the climate crisis that we're facing. We are actually turning her academic work into programs, one called Eco Healing, and it's helping young people heal from and learn how they want to take action in response to climate change and specifically in response to the fires we've had in Boulder. If people are interested in learning more, they can visit us at growingupboulder.org and sign up for our newsletter at the bottom of our website.
You can check out more.orgs or re-listen to this one at news.kgnu.org. And that's all the time we have today for today's Morning Magazine. Thank you to Rosanna Longo-Better, Luis Licon, Stacey Johnson, Shay Castle, Jimmy Sirfas, and Chris Schultz for all of their help. Stay tuned for the BBC News headlines and after that, Connections.